It was for my sake, that I need not drink the alchemist's broth, that he counterspoke the Herrgeschäft and joined the heretics. If your sky lord will reunite us in a new life, I will swear my fealty also to him. Dietrich said nothing of Gerd's unbaptized state. He was unsure of the correct reasoning. The law of love held that no man could be condemned for lacking beliefs he had never had opportunity to learn. But it was true also that only through Jesus could a man enter heaven. Perhaps Gerd would be admitted to that limb of heaven reserved for the virtuous pagans, a place of perfect natural happiness. But if so, and Ilse accepted the Christ, they would not be reunited. It was not an easy question, but he promised to arrange instruction for her and the two others in the camp who also asked. He was pleased at their interest, and curious also what the alchemist's broth might be. To raise a Junker to knighthood was a costly matter, since honor required celebrations worthy of the occasion, festivities, banquets, gifts, a competition of minnesingers and bohorts, the playing at lances. So lords often raised several Junkers at once to share the costs. When Manfred announced that he would raise Eugen, Thierry agreed to raise his Emine as well. The Zimmermans constructed a stand of benches in the meadow from which folk could watch the contests, and the sounds of hammer and saw drowned the grumbling at the extra work. A serf named Carolus was so wroth at the additional work that he ran off, his property escheated to Manfred, who bestowed the manse in halves to Hans and Gottfried. The land is servile, Dietrich warned the new tenants, so you'll owe hand service for it to Manfred, but you yourselves are free tenants. He suggested they engage Volkmar Bauer to assume the ploughing and reaping in return for half shares in the harvest. Volkmar complained, naturally, that he was hard-pressed to work his own manses and those he owed the hare, but he was a forethoughtful man, and his kin might some day need additional furlongs. So arrangements were made by which divers obligations of the strips were rented to others, and the terms were witnessed by the Schultheiss and written into the Weistümer. While the transaction did not win Volkmar's love for the Kränken, it did still the Volk's more overt hostilities. On the day before the knighting, which was the third Sunday in Lent, the Junkers fasted from dawn to dusk. Then, breaking fast at sunset, they put on robes of the purest white English wool, and spent a vigil night on their knees in the chapel. Eugen's wound was healing, as the Savoyard had promised, though the scar was prominent, and his smile would always have a sinister curl to it. Emine, who had fought creditably but without a wound, regarded the scar with something approaching envy. "I much regret the meanness of the festivities," Manfred confessed to Dietrich that evening as he inspected the viewing stands. "Eugen deserves more, but we must yet conceal our Kränkish vassals. Einhard will be much vexed that I did not invite him to play at lances with us." Einhard was the imperial knight by Stag's Leap. "I suspect the old man has heard rumors by now," Dietrich suggested, "but is too courteous to indulge his curiosity." "That pleases. My daughter dislikes bathing him because he smells so. He seldom uses soap, though he was taught since childhood proper bathing. 'French vanities,' he says. I suspect he triumphed on the battlefield because his opponents ran from his stink." Manfred threw his head back and laughed. "Mein Herr," said Dietrich, "I pray you not tilt your head. Among the Kränk it is a mark of submission, and an invitation to the superior to bite the neck in twain." Manfred's eyes shot up. "Is so? I thought them laughing." "Each man sees what his own experience has taught him. You did not punish Grosswald for disturbing the peace. To us, forbearance is a virtue, but to them it signifies weakness." "Ha!" Manfred walked a few more steps with his hands clasped behind the small of his back. Then he turned and inclined his head. "Hans's gesture at Falkenrock when he spared his enemy. Did that signify also weakness?" "Mein Herr, I know not. But his ways are not ours."
"They must learn our ways if they are to stay on my manor."
"If they stay. Their desperation to regain their own country is what drove Hans to his disobedience." Manfred considered him thoughtfully.
"But why such desperation? A man might long for his homeland, for family, or lovers, or wife. But longing eventually dies. Most longing.
On the morrow, the Junkers emerged from the chapel and were bathed, to symbolize their cleanliness, after which they were dressed in linen undergarments, tunics brocaded with gold thread, silk stockings, and embellished shoes. Crimson cloaks were hung about their shoulders, so that the assembly gasped with delight when they re-entered the chapel. The Krenken painted many pictures with their photographia. The chaplain celebrated the mass, while Dietrich and Brother Joachim sang Media Vita in Morte Sumus in choir. The choice was meet, for while the words reminded the young men that death lurked always in their chosen life, the tonalities of the fourth mode lessened the choleric yellow bile which a warrior must ever restrain. After the mass came the Schwertleiter. Eugen and Imain placed their swords upon the altar and promised their services to God. In his homily, Father Rudolph cautioned them to imitate the knights of olden days. In these degenerate times, knights turn against the anointed of the Lord and lay waste the patrimony of the cross, despoil the paupers of Christ, oppress the wicked, and satisfy their own desires with the pain of others. They dishonor their calling and replace their duty to fight with lust for booty and innocent virgins. You must demonstrate instead your honor, loyalty, justice, generosity, and especially your balance, avoiding all excesses. Honor priests, protect the poor, and punish criminals, as in days of old. Dietrich wondered whether the knights of olden times had been as pure and upstanding as they were now remembered. Perhaps Roland and Rodlieb and Arthur had been men no better or worse than Manfred, or von Falkenstein. And yet, was it not a good thing to seek the ideal, regardless how poorly it may have been practiced? To imitate the ideal Roland, and not the fallible man he may have been? Father Rudolph blessed the two swords. Then Manfred dressed Eugen in a double-stitched shirt of linked mail, shoes of iron ringlets, a tough helm with windows, and a shield bearing Eugen's new device, a white rose crossed by a thistle. Once Imain was similarly accoutred by Thierry, and both were kneeling before the altar, Manfred took up each man's sword in turn and laid the accolade upon his shoulder. Formerly this had been done with a hand-slap across the face, but this new French custom had lately become popular in the Germanies. Afterward a banquet was laid in the great hall, an ox roasted upon a spit outside the manor-house, and serfs hurried in and out with great platters bearing haunches and sausages. Laid out were pepper cabbage, candied songbirds baked into pies, eggs pickled in red beets, baked ham in black vinegar sauce, grated sweet beets and carrots combined with raisins. The iced cream and sorbets were also drizzled with the black vinegar sauce. Feasting was accompanied by juggling, mimes, and song. Peter Minnesinger performed a passage from Hartmann von O's Erich, describing the rage of his fellow knights against a count who had beaten his young wife. Dietrich wondered if Manfred had ordered the passage as a gentle reminder to his daughter's betrothed. The bohorts took place in the afternoon. The contenders and their ladies progressed about the field, while the spectators admired their colorful surcoats and livery. Eugen was especially remarked, for he was well liked. The villagers hooted Imain lustily when the two newly raised knights took their positions at opposite ends of the field. Dietrich watched with Max and Hans from the stands, distant enough that the horses did not smell the crank. "We played a game much like this at Paris," Dietrich remarked.
"What?" said Max. "You? At Lances?"
"No, it was a game of obligations. One student was assigned to be the interlocutor and another to be the respondent. The interlocutor's task in the debate was to trap the respondent into maintaining a contradiction. The respondent's task was to avoid the traps. It helped us develop nimble wits." Max grunted.
"Hardly as fine a display as this."
He swept his arm around the curial grounds. "Ach, but the church disapproves of such displays," Dietrich said. Hans clacked his mandibles. "Small wonder, to risk life for sport." "It's not that," Dietrich told him. "It's the display of vanity and pride that is objectionable."
You will thank God for all the vanity and pride, said Max, when you must trust your lives and property to the skills they practice here.
It is to their skills that our lives and properties are usually forfeit, Dietrich said. I think folk may one day be thankful more for the skills that natural philosophers practice.